Chapter 14. Adamantua, Outer System Approaches. The translation bells were sounding along the quarterdeck of the Azimuth. Daylight rose to his feet from the arming block, took his helm off the rack, and lowered it over his head. The neck seals hissed and whirred into place. An attendant approached, dressed in a yellow gown.
"I heard," said Daylight before the man could speak.
The Imperial Fist methodically placed his bolter in its clamp, selected a gladius and sheathed it, and maglocked a combat knife to his chest plate. Then he finally adorned his head with a laurel wreath that marked him as the senior Imperial Fist in the reinforcement detachment. The laurel symbol had already been painted on his shoulder plates. He turned and walked from the arming chamber out onto the quarterdeck space. Hundreds of attendants in yellow robes stopped and watched him as he strode forwards. It was a moment, a singular moment. Daylight was going to war. Daylight was aware of the significance. He had longed for war and felt guilty for doing so. Only the best were ever given the reward of Wall Brother status, but it amounted to a punishment because it took them from the zones of glory and made them live out their lives on ceremonial sentry duty in the drafty halls of the Palace of Terror. This had been his dream since he had won the status. Going back to war had been his dream. Yes, the significance was not lost on him. It was a day full of significance. It was the first time ever that Wall Brethren had been allowed to leave Terror and the Phalanx and go to war in support of their kind. The first time that the entire chapter had been committed at one stroke since the days of the siege, when they had been a legion still. The first time since then that a capital threat had come inside 50 warp weeks of the Terran Corps. Though he was a creature bred for war, Daylight was not blind to the political significance either. Attending the palace, as he had done for so many years, he had watched the activities of the Senatorum and knew power play and counter-agendas when he saw them. Daylight's glorious return to war and the wielding of the Imperial Fists as one unified weapon at this time of crisis were merely byproducts of Lord High Admiral Lansung's ascension. He had made himself look quite imperial by moving his forces in support of the Fists, and even more imperial by magnanimously suggesting that the Fists support and preserve their reputation. He had, in effect, facilitated everything that was happening. The fact that he had effectively sent an entire chapter of Adeptus Astartes to war left a great deal more unsaid about his power. Attendants swept up on either side of Daylight and attached a long cloak to his shoulders, a cloak of blue silk that trailed out behind him. Armed footmen fell in step around him, an honor guard supplied by Heth. Just like politics, the cloak was an encumbrance that Daylight would dispense with in combat. They moved up the quarterdeck and under the valveway arches. The burnished deck throbbed beneath them as the warship bled out power. The warp had just spat out the Azimuth after 6.5 weeks of travel, and now, translated into the realm of real space, they and the rest of the reinforcement squadron were slicing in across the outer banks and belts of the Adamantua system into the compliance zone. As he walked, Daylight processed. Data feeds were inflowing to his visor mount and had been since the trip began. He processed the latest intercepts and battle reports from the line formation, archived data on the planet and the blister nest site, force composition, and a rolling track of action-by-action detail from the very first moment of deployment onwards. From the outside, Daylight looked like a ceremonial figure walking in a grand state parade. On the inside, he was a strategium in war mode. Most of the data he could process was archived, however. It came from the early part of the compliance and from intercepts received before the reinforcement squadron had left the Terran Corps. They had spent weeks in the Empyrean, and nothing viable or reliable had entered the data streams of astropathic communication links during the voyage. Now they were back in real space, the vast leap of their extra-universal transit achieved, communication could resume. Except, Daylight could see from the feeds, nothing was coming from the world called Adamantua. Nothing human. He entered the warship state bridge. Navy officers turned to acknowledge him with formal stiffness, but a gesture sent them back to their vast consoles, set in tiers up the mountainside flanks of the chamber. On high platforms with gilded handrails, strategy officers plotted courses and operated the vast hololithic displays of the central strategium. Lines of Navy armsmen in formal uniforms, in ranks 40 long and 7 wide, stood facing each other on the central, mirror-polished steel floor space of the bridge, forming an avenue down which Daylight could proceed to the command dais. They came to attention, their silver las carbines raised. Daylight walked the line, still processing. Nothing human. Nothing human. Admiral Kiran stepped off the dais to meet him, escorted by General Maskar and a small army of aides, subalterns, and auto clerks. Kiran was Lansung's appointed proxy, a slender and unfriendly-looking man in late middle age, with a permanently cunning expression on his face. He wore silver and blue and a broad bicorn hat. He carried the ship's command wand in his left hand. The wand was a jewel-encrusted device the size of a scepter or battle mace, and it hummed soft songs of deep space and the warpways to itself. Maskar was Lord Commander Militant Heth's proxy on the command warship, though Heth travelled with a squadron aboard the grand carrier Dubrovnik. Unlike Lansung, who had seen the Adamantian crisis in purely political terms and had instructed his officers to conduct it on his behalf, Heth was a more selfless individual. He appreciated the potential scale of the crisis and had elected to join the reinforcements in person. He led 68 brigades of the Astra Militarum, the biggest deployment from the Corps seen in years, and he was not about to place that in the hands of his juniors. Heth wanted to show that unlike Lansung, and indeed the other High Lords, he was prepared to get his hands dirty. The Imperial Fists required the assistance of his Astra Militarum, and he intended to deliver that in person. It had caused a stir when Heth had announced his intention of joining the squadron. There was nothing Lansung could say about it that wouldn't look petty, but Lansung's thunder had been stolen a little. Heth was positioning himself as a willing man of the people, a leader who did, rather than told. It was clear that Heth saw this moment as an opportunity to show that the Astra Militarum, vast and reliable, was the most important service standing in the Imperium's defence, the truest and most doughty. It was also an opportunity for Heth to ease himself out of the shadow cast across the Senatorum High 12 by Lansung, Mesring, and Udo. As per protocol, not all the squadron's senior officers travelled on the same vessel. Vox officers set up a real-time link to Heth so he could coordinate with them. Maskar was a useful officer, short and bullish, with an excellent track record. He had not long returned from service in a frontier campaign, the blood fresh on his tunic, as the phrase went. Daylight had read Maskar's file. He liked the man, liked him for what he could do. None of that data was pertinent now, not Maskar's file, nor the politics on Terra.
"Sir," said Kiran.
"Anything?" asked Daylight. "Anything from the surface?"
"No," replied the Admiral.
"Nothing human," Maskar added with a growl. "I have reviewed the incoming data," said Daylight. "It's very noisy down there."
Kiran nodded to one of his analysis officers, who projected a small hololithic display between his tech-engraved hands as though he was opening a book for them to look at.
"Since our last data from Adamantua," the analysis officer said, "the surface and atmospheric situations have degenerated catastrophically. The planet seems to have been plunged into some kind of stellar crisis. It's almost primordial down there. We presumed at first that it might have been struck by another body, a large meteor, but there is no trace of that very distinctive damage pattern."
Daylight watched the man's shifting display, staying one step ahead of everything he said.
"Adamantua has been rendered unstable in the 6 weeks since we last saw it," the analysis officer continued. "It is unstable atmospherically, geologically, and orbitally. There are gross levels of surface radiation and significant signs of massive gravitic instability."
"There were never any indications of gravitic weaknesses in the early planetary surveys," said Admiral Kiran.
"However," said Maskar. Some of the last few intercepts we received from the expedition force before we departed spoke of what appeared to be gravitational anomalies.
That data was never substantiated, said the analysis officer. We have been attempting to contact Terra astropathically to see what they may have heard from the expedition fleet while we were in transit.
The answer is precious little, it seems, said Kiran.
He looked directly at the towering space marine.
All effective contact with your chapter master and the expedition fleet was lost over 6 weeks ago, 2 days after we entered the warp.
So they are gone? Asked Daylight.
Dead. There is no sign of a fleet or of any surface deployment, said Maskar.
But that isn't to say they aren't there.
The planet and its orbital environs are a mess of interference patterns and disruption, said the analysis officer. It is quite possible that the fleet is there, as well as surface forces, but our scanners can't detect them, and we can't hear their vox.
So what are we hearing? Asked Daylight.
Massive amounts of sonic and infrasonic noise bursts, said the analysis officer. Similar to the kind of noise bursts reported by the surface forces before comms went down, but of greater intensity, duration, and regularity. It's as though the planet is howling in agony.
Kiran shot the man a scolding look. The analysis officer stepped back, ashamed of his colourful description.
What's making the noise? Asked Daylight.
I think it's some kind of stellar effect, said Kiran. A solar storm, perhaps, or a transmitted byproduct of the gravitational mayhem.
Except, said Maskar. Except? Asked Daylight. It reads as organic, said Lord Commander Militant Heth's proxy.
He said it hesitantly, as though he didn't quite believe it himself.
How can it be organic? Asked Daylight.
A voice, murmured the analysis officer. It's like a voice.
It's something amplified and broadcast, said Maskar.
A weapon of some description? Suggested Kiran.
What action do we take? Asked Maskar. We deploy, of course, said the unmistakable tones of the Lord Commander Militant.
They turned. The vox and pictlink had been established to the Lord Commander Militant's vessel, and his face, slightly crackled by interference patterns, had appeared in the ruddy field of a large, hololithic projector unit.
Is that not rash, my lord? Asked Admiral Kiran. We don't even know how close we can get and maintain the safety of the squadron.
We travelled 6 weeks to face a problem and perhaps save the lives of some honoured friends, said Heth, his voice signal distorting slightly. We are also investigating a potential capital threat to the Terran core. I don't think this is the time to be prissy. How long until we're inside a decent deployment distance, Admiral?
4 hours and 17 minutes, replied Kiran.
Are the men ready for planetary landing, General?
Heth asked.
All infantry and armor support will be boarded on the dropships and surface landers within the hour, sir, replied Maskar. I can commit a full force drop as soon as we're in range.
And the Imperial Fists? Asked Heth. The Wall Brethren?
We are ready, replied Daylight.
Then the only thing that appears rash, said Heth, is the notion of me making this decision, rather than waiting to hear it from the nominated and honoured commander of this expedition. Forgive me, sir. The call is yours.
There was a pause.
Thank you, my lord, said Daylight. Given the extremity of the conditions, I believe it would be prudent to arrange an advance recon, fast and powerful, to penetrate the zone and report back before we risk the bulk of our forces. I will lead this. Have a ship prepared.
Daylight looked at Heth.
The main force should be held at readiness. As soon as we have data, and as soon as an enemy or objective is identified, the fleet elements and the Imperial Guard will take it with the fury of the Emperor himself. Does that seem like a plan to you, my lord? I couldn't have put it better myself, replied Heth. Then let us begin, said Daylight. The Emperor protects, nodded Maskar and Kiran, making the sign of the Aquila. And we, in turn, replied Daylight, protect him.